Yeah, that sucked. To have something go wrong on stage after that many revisions and that much work that goes into it is terrible.
Technology is our frenemy. This is Every Speaker Has a Story. Welcome to the first episode of the Every Speaker Has a Story podcast. I'm Dr. Steve Vroman, a professor at Texas Lutheran University. I've been teaching public speaking for 20 years, keynote speaker, writer, blogger, now podcaster, all those different kinds of things. So what this is I don't know if you remember Gen Xers out there, you remember Mr. Rogers, 321 Contact, all those shows that took you behind the scenes so you could see how, like, you know, crayons were made and things like that. Well, this is kind of how speeches are made. And so I wanted to use all the sort of resources I have, all the contacts I have in the world of public speaking to bring you some of the background material on what it's like to be a speaker. Because most people are nervous, most people don't like it, some people wish they could be better. And I think that the key to that is to find out what's really going on for people. Because we think when we watch someone speak who's great, we just think, oh, all that must have been fine, everything must have been great, and there's an awful lot going on that maybe we don't know about. And so I thought, all of us who like to see behind the scenes, here's our chance to go behind the scenes with public speaking. Every episode is going to be focused on a particular area, good or bad. So we'll have an episode where people have their greatest speech memories and one with their worst. We'll talk about how people deal with nerves and all sorts of different things. And this particular episode, the first, is going to be about technical difficulties, which I have to say, this podcast was supposed to come out 3 weeks ago. That's at least what I told everybody was going to be in it. But I was having too many technical difficulties to get the podcast finished, which is this great irony, but at the same time, it's like the worst sort of irony. So everything was working great with my very high-tech podcast setup, which is basically, you know, not a turntable and microphones like Beck, right? But I mean, we've got a mixer board and microphones so that, you know, people can come in and record their interviews. And everything had been working fine all summer as I recorded all these interviews. And I was editing them together, and I had to record this narration right here. You can see it's so worth it. You're listening to this and you're just like, God, that's fantastic. It's just this dulcet tones. He's just, you know, I could listen to them all day. Hopefully you are. Well, anyway, here we are. I've got this stuff set up, and I got a computer upgrade over the summer. That happens when you teach in college. You know, you wait a couple years, and you get to the moment where they upgrade your computer, and it's like, great. So I plugged everything back in, and now I can't get anything to work right. Everything has this horrible, you know. So I'm going to cut one of those in right now real quick so that you can hear it. But here it is. Okay, welcome to Every Speaker Has a Story. This is, oh my God, this audio. Right? So, like, what is that sound? It's terrible. So I was like, okay, you know, I went online, I've looked it up. I was like, I had this right before. What am I doing with my mixer board? I mean, there's like black knobs and blue knobs and red knobs and yellow knobs and white. And I thought that I'd had all the levels correct because I was getting good audio on everything else. And all of a sudden, I couldn't figure it out. So I spent like days looking for, what am I doing wrong on this sort of like thing? And is it really going to be that technical difficulties are going to prevent me from making my technical difficulties episode? Yeah, it seems like it is. So finally, I saw somebody online who's like, hey, you know what? If your microphone audio cable is near your power supply, you might pick up weird sort of vibrations and noise. And I'm like, okay, so I traced the microphone. You can see where this is going, can't you? I mean, if you can hear this. I'm tracing the microphone cord to find out, okay, maybe it's along the power strip or something. And I trace it, and I trace it, and I trace it, and yeah, I plugged the two microphones into the wrong inputs. So while I'm hunched over the one microphone trying to pick up good audio, what's really recording me is the microphone on the other side of the office for guest speakers to come in. And so I'm getting recorded through 4 feet of whatever. And no matter what I did, it wouldn't work. There was noise. Everything was terrible. I had to put these filters on and it just didn't work. So finally, I plugged the microphone into the right input and here I am. Isn't it fantastic? So, you know, technical difficulties are with us all the time, and what matters is what you do with them. Because unlike me, who I can just delay my podcast for 3 weeks and get it out because I don't have a listenership yet, you know, when you're up there, standing in front of 100 people or 1,000 people or 10 people, and it's not working, what do you do? And that's really what we're going to talk about today. Today I'm going to bring you four stories of public speaking disasters in the technical realm. And our first story is from Mary Shahan, who is a motivational speaker who goes around trying to teach people how to take control of their health. And in this case, it's a question of the technical difficulties involved in the location itself and things that you really never had control of. Let's have a listen.
And sometimes we are places giving our talk now where our PowerPoint doesn't really project well. It's amazing. You can be in classrooms where you think that that would offer the best possible chance for a stellar presentation, and you figure out that the lights can either be totally on or totally off. Well, when the lights are off, your slides look amazing. When the lights are on, you look amazing.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to inspire and motivate people, we've had to choose and determine that they need to see us. In fact, we've even had people in the audience say, turn the lights back on, we can't see Miss Mary's face. And while that makes me feel really good, then I can't see the slides very well, and my cues are like uncomfortable. And yes, that would make me nervous. We even gave a talk last year in a venue, in a classroom, where the pull-down screen was so worn out that it was full of holes. It looked like it was moth-eaten. And so our projection just went straight through. It was like it was being projected on lace. It was just awful. It was just awful. So, yeah, our program sometimes changes and adapts itself quickly to how we're able to show it. And if we want to include a video clip, that's the quickest way to disaster, because you would think in 2016 that we would have internet that was reliable anywhere you go, and especially in a classroom, but that's the least reliable internet there is. So you're all set up, you're going to deliver the punch with this little short piece of video, and it won't play. So you're always having, I think, to adapt and land on your feet. And that is the key to knowing what you're talking about and being completely comfortable with it.
So we'll bring Mary back in a future episode. There turns out there's an awful lot of things that can go wrong in the world of motivational speaking. There's an awful lot of things that can go right as well, but we'll hear from her in another episode. Next up is Ray Segern, who's a marketer, keynote speaker. He spoke at TEDx San Antonio 2 years before I did, and Ray and I were on a panel at NACAS, which is the National Association of College Auxiliary Services, and we were presenting in front of that group. College auxiliaries, for those of you who don't know, are like bookstores and parking and dining and things like that. So we were up there speaking, and yeah, some things went wrong. In this case, you know those little wireless presenters? And you push the button, and it's supposed to do something? Yeah, doesn't always work. So let's hear from Ray.
That NACAS deal that we did at the San Antonio Convention Center was a lot of fun. It really was. And what's weird is that is actually the silver medal incident of technical difficulties as a speaker. And I've done a bunch of speaking going all the way back to the debate team in high school and in college stuff. Did a lot of work in radio through the years before I started my consulting business. So technical glitches are part of it. But actually that day, that clicker thing that we had, and then my deal at the San Antonio TEDx event in 2012 are the gold and silver medal rounds there. The San Antonio represents for me. I think this may be true, actually, Stephen. Maybe San Antonio, for me, is just the Bermuda Triangle of speaking events. You know, I had a very explicit moment. I had a conversation with God before I hopped up on stage to deliver that TEDx, and it was one of those very weird moments where I was clearly connecting to something bigger than me. Let me give you the specific. I'm not going to give you the specifics on my conversation with God, but I will give you the specifics on where we got to, which was walk out on that stage, and if the slide advancer doesn't give you what you want, be prepared to do the whole speech without your slides. And that's it. That was ultimately what I did for that TEDx talk. I had labored back and forth, and I don't know about your experience with your TED experience, but mine was highly collaborative. curated was the word they used, and it felt more like that was a whole process unto itself we could talk about, actually. But where we had gotten to every slide, there were permissions required. You had to have every slide approved. So to go through all of the collaboration and curation, getting the permissions to use certain slides, and then ultimately to walk out on that stage and stand in that red circle and say, I'm going to do this whole 8 minutes with no slides, was something that that God and I got to in the few minutes before I walked on stage. That said, it's interesting that if you go back and look at the video on YouTube, that the TEDx San Antonio people went back and surgically reinserted those slides where they made sense. But I got to tell you, it felt great to go out and do it. And I spent those 45 minutes in the zone preparing to go on that stage, preparing to do it with no slides. I was the first speaker out of four that day, as opposed to being 11th, the last speaker on the morning program at the TEDx event. So I think that there's a serendipity to the fact that for my TEDx speech, I got the benefit of other people stepping on their weenies before me and got to adjust on the fly. With being the first guy up on stage, I had to respond in the moment. And to be honest with you, when I look at how some of you other guys dealt with it, I wish I had a mulligan on it, to be honest with you. If we're talking about that specific instance, you're best suited to sort of get into that mind space. It's about being mindful, I believe. And mindfulness is not a destination. It's a process. It's a journey. It's a marathon with no finish line. And I would probably say that of that 12-minute speech that I gave at the NACAS deal, the first few minutes were oddly enough, man, it's you're in there and it's that awkward thing and you're working through it, right? And then at some point, like, okay, that's what's going on. So I just got to retool. But sometimes it's that awkward moment of realization that are the hardest. Whereas I noticed when you did it, you were in rapport immediately with the guy. You just was next slide, next slide, next slide, next slide. And it was just, you made it look real effortless, I noticed. And sort of is what it is. And you're in the moment. And I think what I took away from that was I had that moment of meditation and mindfulness and God-centeredness and connectedness before I went on the TED stage because I had seen what was happening. And what I learned coming out of San Antonio was, let's just do that always, all the time, and life will be better.
Well, Ray's really nice to me in this clip. I'm not sure it was so effortless when I got up there. I was watching him on stage knowing that he couldn't get the slides to move. And I'm thinking the whole time, oh, what am I going to do? You know, it's just impossible. I'd already had to deal with technical difficulties at that NACAS event in that my PowerPoint wouldn't work off of their equipment, and I had to be plugging in my equipment into that. So I thought, well, the chances that they're going to get this fixed for me are none, given that they're working with my strange computer instead of their own. And they didn't. They didn't fix it for any of us. It was I still don't know what it was, a battery issue or a interference issue, something like that. It just wouldn't work. So I just sort of called out next slide, and it went through, which was awkward, but it worked. Of course, the speaker, two speakers after me, was fantastic. He would just hold the wireless presenter up in the air as high as he could go, like arms up, like he's hanging from a vine, and make this exaggerated clicking motion with his thumb, which really was just a signal to the tech guys to click the button to go forward. But it looked like he was able to harness the power of the universe in the way the rest of us weren't, and was just clicking better than we were. So, yeah, we kind of totally hated him a little bit in the competitive way, but it was also awesome to see somebody just sort of come up with that. Just, you know, I'm going with it. It's easier when you're the four speakers in the first, and don't let Ray fool you. He was still really good up there. So our next speaker is Laura Torres, who's a former student of mine, who is going to talk about another kind of speaking event that she's doing. In this case, going to small venues and having to cart all of your technology with you to figure out how you can make the best impression on local groups, which sometimes it seems like, hey, a small group, I'm going to be less nervous. What could go wrong? And if my technology breaks, well, it's just me and them. It's never that simple. And in some ways, in a small group, it's even worse. Let's hear.
The worst experience I've had so far had to be with I guess, technology or, you know, materials you need for a presentation. And so this was to a Rotary group, and they're a little bit smaller. And so they were sitting in kind of like a round table. It kind of just reminded me of Thanksgiving because I was right in the center and they were all around me eating. And so I had brought my computer and they had the projector, but they didn't have speakers. So I had speakers, but they were back in the office. And so it was too far to go. And so here I was, and I hooked everything up, and they could see the video that I usually play at the presentations, but they couldn't really hear it. And so I had to turn up the volume on the laptop as loud as I could. And even that still wasn't anything at all. So I'm here holding this up so that they could hear it in the best way possible. And I just felt so awkward. I felt like a middle school kid having a presentation or something. It was just really awkward for me because I'm standing there. I know they can't hear anything because I can barely hear it. And I'm right next to the computer. So I'm just holding this and we're all sitting in silence, listening to people eat. And it was super awkward.
You'll notice, of course, in Laura's story's recording that there are some strange sounds involved with her her microphone, which was not functioning entirely correctly at the time that we were doing the interview. But it was a good story, and I wanted to keep it anyway. But it also brings to mind the sort of larger sort of concern we have about technical difficulties. It'll ruin everything if it doesn't work quite right. And, you know, her story still came across. It wasn't the easiest listen through all those little pieces, you know, especially for veteran podcast listeners who are out there looking for the purest of audio experiences, you know, or whatnot, like they're a commercial for microphones or something. But it still worked. And so everything doesn't have to go right for you to have an effect. And it's part of what we'll bring up again in our next episode, which is going to be about nervousness. It'll come out in a couple weeks, which is, you know, we're so afraid that anything that goes wrong is going to ruin everything that I think that we drive ourselves a little nuts. On the other hand, though, our final interview of the okay, see, now should I edit that out? That was a mistake. I couldn't get to my words, right? So, like, I can. I've got my little program here. I can snip this and cut it out. But, you know, sometimes the mistake doesn't matter. In fact, so our last one here is Mitch Hagney, who we spoke together at TEDx San Antonio in 2014. And, you know, there were not as many technical difficulties as during Ray's year in 2012 when the host suggested that this would be the first EdX because there was no technology that worked. That was the great Molly Cox. Fantastic. Super funny. Anyway, you know, we had all kinds of difficulties. I had a PowerPoint problem that didn't work. And if you go back and look at the video of my speech, not that this is a plug or anything, they fixed it, you know, in the video, just like Ray said that they did in his year. Of course, I had the great joke about about it. And I have to tell you the joke that I thought this was really good. You know, it worked. And I said, geez, you could, you know, I'm a professor of public speaking. Now that you could tell from that. And that got the most laughs of anything I did as I messed up there. And that got edited out on the final version on YouTube, which is kind of cool because it makes me look more professional. But at the same time, I really liked that moment with the audience, you know, and it worked. And it actually, I think, it actually helped to have that problem. Now, Mitch Hagney here, on the other hand, this is a story when everything, in fact, does go wrong. And what is it that you're going to do about it? So let's listen to Mitch.
Yeah, that sucked. To have something go wrong on stage after that many revisions and that much work that goes into it is terrible, man. Like, you have two options. You can either pause, ask everyone to hold on for a moment while you get everything in order, or you can just ignore it entirely and pretend like absolutely nothing is wrong. And you only get to make that decision in about 2 seconds, because 2 seconds is about as long as you can have a pause sound natural on stage. Past that, oh God, it seems like an hour. So I really didn't want to pause, since no one else had done so for the entire, 12 speeches before me. And so I just ignored it. Now, I noticed a lot, and I thought about it most of the way through my presentation, but I was so practiced that the words fell out pretty easily. But no one else seemed to notice them, which it's kind of it's reassuring that you didn't particularly notice even in the audience. The visuals, though, weren't even close to as important as what I was saying and how I was saying it. And that, to me, reinforced a lot that two things. One, what you sense going wrong is only based off of a deviation from the norm, and only you who have experience delivering something know what that norm is. And so it's easy for you to overestimate the impact in your mind. And two is visuals and even the specific wording of what you're saying are not even close to as important as you think. The overall thesis and the manner in which you deliver it, those are probably the most important aspects of a presentation. And everything else is just frosting. And frosting tastes delicious, but it's not really going to fill you up.
Okay. So when you were going through, was any part of the speech difficult to get through because, you know, because you've got that little prompter down there where you can see the visual aids. And for some people, the visual aids help them cue their memory along, and you didn't have that. Or did you have it in your head in a way that you didn't need the visuals to?
In such a specifically timed speech, I had every word planned out. There were a couple changes just because I don't have the memorization capacity that some people do. So I adjusted a couple words here and there. And I probably even made a couple last-minute adjustments just based off of what I thought was truer or sounded better. But it's easy to follow your order when you have no impromptu ability to change things.
So did it make you nervous up there? Were you freaking out? I mean, you got like 1,000 people in the audience. It's going on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, when you're already like 90% freaked out, the extra 10% doesn't feel that much. I mean, the audience was probably 800 people or so, and having visuals fail at that point when you've been preparing for months, the audience is all in front of you, your entire city is watching you, and you're probably going to send this video out to your grandma in you know, a month. Yeah, I was nervous enough as it was. Having no visuals just added on top.
So that's Mitch's story. And, you know, what he doesn't tell you is how fantastic he was. I was in the audience and I watched him go up there and I thought, wow, Mitch just decided not to use his slides. Interesting choice. Because you can see, if you were to look up his speech, that's Hagney, H-A-G-N-E-Y, on YouTube at TED, and you can see his slides are great, you know, really interesting, dramatic pictures of farmland in the morning and things like that. And so it was surprising to me that he'd not used his slides, but there wasn't a second where it felt like, oh, something's going wrong. I felt like he was just making that choice, no awkwardness at all. So not everybody, you know, can be Mitch and hit it out of the park so that it feels like an organic, perfectly made choice. And Ray and I, you know, we were walking to our car after that NACAS event when our clickers wouldn't work, and we both just felt like, man, that was rough. And to get through it, we made jokes. We sort of made, you know, we did what we had to do up on that stage to make sure that we didn't lose the thread of what we were doing. But as we were walking to the car, we were able to honestly tell each other, you know what? You did well. It was okay. It really was. And it was. You know, nothing is ever going to go perfect. And it's possible to hit a home run like Mitch. It's also possible to, you know, get a single, like a bunt. Just throw one down and run as fast as you can to the base and hope you get done, which is what Ray and I did. And if you look at Mary and Laura's stories, you know, in unexpected, completely unpredictable ways, you're going to have these small pieces of technology that will fail, and it will feel like it ruins everything. But you know what? You're going to go again tomorrow, and you're going to go the next day, and you're just going to keep going. So this is the version of inspiration you get on the Every Speaker Tells a Story podcast, taking you behind the scenes. Because when you get behind the scenes, just like how crayons or sausage is made, it's just not always that pretty. So if you're nervous something's going to go wrong, here's the ultimate takeaway. It will. It just will. Your job is to be ready for that moment and know what it is you're going to say when it fails, as it inevitably will. So next time, we will talk about something besides failure. How's that for a change? In the meantime, if you want to get in touch with me, if you have questions, if you have comments, you have arguments, or if you want to be on the show and share your story about public speaking, you can find me all over social media at More Brains, one word with a Z at the end. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, you can find me there. You can also find the More Brains blog at Blogger. And all those places are good ways to get in touch with me and to find more information on all these speakers and all these ideas going forward. So until next time, I appreciate you listening. I'm Dr. Steve Roman. Ah, wait, I almost forgot the credits. The Car Talk guys were always great at this with all their puns, but I should give thanks where thanks are due. I should give thanks to Texas Lutheran University for allowing me the space and time and distraction to pull together a podcast. I want to thank all of my presenters today who shared their stories with us and everybody who's been interviewing with me all this time and taking time out of their busy days to share what are not always their favorite memories, I suppose. And I also want to thank my son, Sam Johnson Roman, a percussionist at Seguin High School, who composed my intro and outro music to this show. And one of these days, technical difficulties aside, I will figure out how to record a 5-octave marimba without a whole bunch of horrible overtones in the room. So until then, we'll get this version of it. His music's great. My recording is not. But thanks to Sam, and hope you enjoy.